Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to IDVAC Blog Talk Radio, brought to you by the Institute on Domestic Violence in the African American Community, in collaboration with the Women of Color Network and the African American Domestic Peace Project. IDVAC Blog Talk Radio is made possible by a grant from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Administration for Children and Families, Family and Youth Services Bureau, and Family Violence Prevention and Services Program. Now, points of view expressed in this program do not necessarily represent the official positions or policies of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. IDVAC Blog Talk Radio brings you rich conversations and education on issues surrounding domestic violence in African American and African communities.
Welcome to the IDVAC Blog Talk Radio Show. My name is Dr. Vanessa Jenkins Hightower. I serve as a director here at Norfolk State University. Tonight, we're going to have a conversation about Title IX and the impact it has had on addressing domestic violence on college campuses. As you know, over the past few years, an important national conversation has grown around the experiences and rights of sexual assault survivors on college campuses. There's been little attention paid to the reality of other forms of campus gender-based violence, particularly those perpetrated by intimate partners. Now, intimate partner violence, such as dating violence, domestic violence, relationship abuse, may include sexual assault, but not always. Tonight, we're going to take a closer look at the other forms of intimate partner violence, dating violence, domestic violence, and relationship abuse, and the impact it has on our college campuses. Tonight, as we have many guests on the line with us, we have different schools represented. We have Virginia State University, Norfolk State University, and Old Dominion University. I'm going to ask each person to tell me who they are and tell us a little bit what you do. Is Erica Blackwood, are you on the line?
I am. Hello, Vanessa. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? Can you just tell us your name? And you already know it's Erica Blackwood. Tell us a little bit what you do, your title, and what you do.
Yes, so my name is Erica Blackwood, and I am the Sexual Assault Prevention Educator and Victim Advocate at Virginia State University.
Okay, thank you. I think we have Dean Johnson. Are you on the line?
Yes, I am. Good evening. This is Dean Johnson, Tracy Johnson. I serve as the Dean of Students here at Norfolk State University, and I also serve as the Deputy Title IX Coordinator for Students.
Thank you. Welcome, Dean Johnson. Is Mr. Walker, are you on the line?
I am.
Okay. Tell us a little bit what you're doing.
Jonathan Walker. I serve as the Assistant Dean of Students here at Norfolk State University, so I work with our student conduct program.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Do we have Chief Covington? Are you on the line?
I am, and good evening, everyone. I am Troy Covenant. I'm the Chief of Police here and Public Safety here at Norfolk State University.
Okay. Let's see. Mark, Lieutenant Mark Anthony, are you on the line?
I am. Good evening. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you? Can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing, the role you play there at the university?
Yes. So, again, my name is Mark Anthony. I am a lieutenant with the Old Dominion University Police Department, and as such, my position is that I'm the commander of the investigations unit and also reporting directly under me, clearing compliance coordinator, Andretta Smith, who is probably also on the line as well.
Oh, great. Thank you. And can you introduce your guest and ask her to tell us a little bit about what she does?
Sure. She's not with me, but I believe she's online. So, Andretta, if you're listening, go ahead and answer up.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Andretta Smith, and I am the Clery Compliance Coordinator and Crime Analyst for Old Dominion University.
Oh, great. Welcome to the line. As you guys can see, we have a host of interesting people online tonight. Let's go ahead and delve into some of these questions we're going to ask. I'm not going to ask them directly, so we just ask that you just chime on in. The first question I have is, are you seeing an increase in domestic dating violence incidents on campus? And if so, what type of cases are you actually investigating? Is it same-sex, heterosexual, you've been live off campus, on campus? Anybody can just chime in and answer that question.
I'll chime in with Old Dominion University. I will say that our numbers for those type of incidents are pretty consistent with where they were last year, so we're not necessarily seeing an increase or decrease either way. But like many of us know, keep in mind that this is a fairly underreported type of crime, so we're fairly certain that there are a lot more incidents that are occurring that for a number of reasons people don't want to bring to the attention of the authorities. And they may use different venues in order to reach out and tell folks about what they're going through.
Okay, what are we seeing at Virginia State? Anything, do you guys see an increase of domestic violence or dating violence on your campus?
From Virginia State standpoint, we have kind of seen an increase, but I don't think that the issue is directly related to the number of incidences more than it is victims being more willing to report and understanding that some of the things that are happening in their relationships are being attributed to the characteristics in dating and domestic violence categories.
Gotcha. Okay, that's interesting. Any comments from Norfolk State, or what are we seeing here? Compliance, with the Dean of Students' Office.
Absolutely. So I would say that since we've had this as a category of reporting, we've seen more incidents of it, but we've done a lot of training on campus on things people should report. So it's not necessarily that the students who are involved in the dating or domestic violence situations are reporting it. It's more being reported from residence hall assistants and hall directors and other people in the community that are reporting the incidents. And we also see both same-sex and heterosexual relationships. And I would say mostly the incidents, again, are on campus based on who's reporting the incident.
Okay, thank you so much, Dean Johnson. Anyone else want to have any comments on that? Okay. Let's look at this next question. Now, as we talk about dating and domestic violence, how are the cases handled if the student lives off campus with his or her boyfriend or girlfriend who is also a student? Do they handle them the same way if they live on campus? And that may be, I guess, maybe a police question, and I guess a Title IX person or someone from the deputy coordinator's position.
Lieutenant Andrew of Old Dominion University, I'll be happy to take that first question.
Okay.
So for Old Dominion University, first of all, we are in the city of Norfolk, and the bulk of our students actually don't reside on campus. We have a large number of students that commute back and forth, but there is a significant number of students that live both in the campus or nearby the campus. So some of those students actually live off the campus but still reasonably close, and there's a difference in terms of who they report to. Potentially, they could report those incidents to the city of Norfolk, and the Norfolk Police Department could respond and handle those incidents. And in some cases, we may not even be aware of those. If we are the first person notified, then they're within our concurrence jurisdiction, which extends about a mile out from the campus, then we will respond. And in terms of how the investigation proceeds, there really is no difference whether it's on campus or off campus. We investigate the matter the same way.
Okay.
And Chief Coveney here at Norfolk State University. Chief Coveney here at Norfolk State University. That would be the same for us. Norfolk, we have an MOU with the City of Norfolk, and we have concurrent jurisdiction as well. And so, if they have two of our students who are involved, we'll get a copy of the report, and so we'll still do an investigation and follow up, and then we'll make sure that we contact the dean of students and that they get a copy and that they're aware of the incident. But again, I'm not finding any that we've had really that happened off campus, I guess since my arrival anyway. I think probably the majority of our students either stay outside of the area, but like I said, we have a significant population on campus as well. But off campus, we really don't see that much. And I haven't been contacted in reference to domestic violence off campus.
Okay. Let me just ask this. Let me just expand this a little bit more. With students who live off campus, just to try to help our audience with this, let's just say, for example, if in fact a student lives off campus, she's involved in a domestic with her living boyfriend, and again, like I said, she's a student, and she comes to school and she reports that. Does the campus have any jurisdiction to investigate that case? Let's just say they were students, this is Old Dominion or Norfolk State, and they live in Chesapeake. Let's just say a commuter student lives in Chesapeake, and she comes to school and says, hey, my boyfriend, and also if it was a girlfriend, reported that, yes, both of us are students here, and we had a domestic last night. Do you guys investigate that? And maybe the dean of students can answer that question. Do you do anything with those cases? Or how are they handled as far as looking at what Title IX is asking us to do?
Well, yes, we would handle it the same way. I haven't had an instance like that occur where both students were students and they lived off campus, but we would absolutely handle it the same way. Now, it might be a little difficult with things like no contact orders. If they're living together and they're off campus and there's lease situations involved, but, we would still handle it the same way, the investigation part and all of that.
Okay. Anybody else want to comment on that?
Chief Covenant, and we would do that. We would still do an investigation. Now, it may not, if it's in Chesapeake out of our jurisdiction, we couldn't do it criminally. However, we could do it a student referral on the issue and still recommend, because they're still Norfolk State students, whether they're on campus or off campus, and so they still represent the university and fall up under the administrative properties.
That's great. Okay. What are some of the challenges do you find in investigating domestic violence cases on campus?
Lieutenant Anthony, again, with Old Dominion University, is for us, one of the biggest challenges really is the unwillingness of many victims to both report and or prosecute the crime. In many instances, when they do file a report, there's a significant period of time has passed, so we've lost ability to truly find witnesses and potentially miss forensic evidence that might be value to us. And just persuading these folks that to be able to trust the police, to know that we would hold folks accountable if we can put these investigations together, there's a very large reluctance to involve the police. They just rather go another route.
That's interesting. Go ahead, Chief.
I was going to say, in some cases, they've already made up by the time we are aware of it. And so we had a case where we sent out a notification to stay away from each other. By the time the notification had gone out, they were already back together or friends. And so that's another issue from the time notification gets to us. The perpetrator's probably already said, I'm sorry, and try to make up with the person. And so sometimes they're forgiven already by the time we get notified.
And I think a sort of a different challenge is when you're looking in terms of a smaller campus and in terms of resources, having folks who are available to investigate any sort of Title IX violation if a student is pursuing it through the university or administrative process. So if an institution, of course, is smaller, they're going to have fewer resources. And that means, of course, we're also trying to ensure that there's no conflicts of interest. So, having the resources available for folks to investigate a case, for our campus, our office is fairly small and we're handling investigating, but we also have to, of course, determine a sanction. And there's a limited number of folks, and we're trying to prevent that there's a conflict of interest. And also, this sort of is the hookup, you know, generation. And so some students don't even understand truly, you know, we've had students say, you know, it's just a hookup, or, you know, they weren't in a relationship and don't really truly understand what dating violence or domestic violence truly is.
It's interesting you brought that point up.
A couple other points from my perspective at ODU is these types of sexual assault investigations are unique as compared to other crimes in that there are very few witnesses. Basically, you have a victim and you have a suspect. So these things occur behind closed doors. There's no one else around. It's not like there's a robbery or a burglary where potentially someone could have seen the actual act. They may have witnessed behavior leading up to the incident, but when it comes down to it, really, it's just what he said and what she says. And on top of that, forensic evidence oftentimes is not necessarily helpful, because all forensic evidence gives us is that some sexual act may have occurred. What it doesn't tell us, though, is whether that sexual act was consensual or not. So really, you're back to, again, what he said, what she said, and how credible both their statements are. And that's very complicated, and many prosecutors are unwilling to go forward just based on that in the absence of other types of corroborating evidence.
That's interesting. Erica, do you have any comment on that? I mean, because I know you see victims a lot. What's your take on that?
Okay, so what it is with our university is that we are situated kind of within three separate police districts. So when off campus or we have challenges in investigating, because we're trying to coordinate with whatever district it happened in, as well as campus police, if there are any charges going to be brought before student conduct. So a lot of times we have a lot of miscommunication, maybe overlapping of things happening, and it kind of, from my standpoint, being the victim advocate, it can wear the victim out with a lot of things happening. Some of the same things I'm hearing are some of the exact same things that, you know, students have to encounter, or that we have to encounter, where, you know, you're trying to convince someone, yes, let's go forward with the case, and then they come back and tell you, hey, no, I've made up with him and we are talking again. And so what happens to these investigations, not only that have taken place on campus, but the ones that are also taking place in the community? How do we move forward on that? So, yeah, I definitely understand the challenges. And then having those, even though we have the MOUs, with the jurisdiction that we are in, which is Chesterfield County, we have MOUs with Chesterfield County, but we also are very close to Colonial Heights and Petersburg. So when things happen in these other places, you know, we get the phone calls for, hey, this happened, and these two reported that they are Virginia State University students. So we still have to deal with those things. But I don't know, sometimes there's just this education piece and this fear of reporting for students. So once it gets one place, they feel like it might have gotten out of hand, and so now they're trying to stop the train from rolling, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I know we had mentioned this maybe earlier about underreporting, and I think Lieutenant Anthony had stated this, but just to talk about it a little bit more, and maybe, Erica, you can talk about it too, and anyone else. Are we finding that dating violence and domestic violence, is it underreported? Are we finding that, you know, because a lot of times I know that it does happen in isolation, but, you know, you see the fights that happen on campus between two people. Are you finding that it's more bystander people, bystanders are reporting, or roommates, or is it being underreported by the victims themselves? Which I guess I'm making sense of that. Who are we finding doing the reporting, I guess? Is it the victim themselves or bystanders or roommates or RAs? And then maybe Dean Johnson might have addressed that a little bit. Anybody want to expound on that some more?
This is Erica from Virginia State again. I find that it kind of just depends on the situation. Sometimes we get with the dating and domestic violence where it might have come to a point where this has happened over time, you know, mm-hmm. and after a point of, you know, so many incidents, the students then report themselves, the victim then reports themselves. Sometimes it's at the urging of friends once they've been to something where they are clear on what labels and some of the definitions are, being as though that also the person who does education, I work very hard to make sure that they understand that spectrum things, that dating violence and things happen on a spectrum, and it's kind of like a continuum. And so making sure that they understand the definitions, because sometimes even after that, it may take a while. And I think that we face particular, I don't think that's a secret, but it's even more underreported within the African-American community.
Are you seeing, I know Mr. Walker talked about the hookup. Are you finding the hookup? Are you hearing more about that on your campus as well?
Yeah, and feeling like students feeling like their thing is, no, we weren't in a relationship. We were just talking.
Right.
Right. So they don't want to, and then we're hearing things, you know, it's gone from hookup culture to situationships and flirtationships. You know, the language keeps changing, and with the changing of the language, it's getting harder for us to put education out there that helps students understand when they're in a situation that could be dangerous.
This is my first time hearing that situationship. It's a very
recent
term.
All the time. No, they say, and we will try to clarify. We've tried to clarify that. We say, okay, were you guys in a relationship? No, we weren't in a relationship. Oh, so you were just hooking up. No, we weren't hooking up. We were just kind of like talking. Okay, so what does that mean? You know, like a situationship. And I'm like, okay, what is that? I have to get them to define these things for you.
It's good
to
have.
Go ahead.
I was going
to
say, it's good to have young
to
people. I defer to you.
No, I was going to say we might need to start keeping a tally of all these new words so that we can add them in to our training. That's what I was going to make a statement. But go ahead.
Go ahead. I was just going to add, in addition to like the situationship, I've seen a few instances where we've had reoccurrences of incidents. And to be honest, those incidents that were recurring, it was the roommate, you know, or the roommates that kept coming forward, or a staff member in the residence hall that came forward to say, you know, this keeps happening, and, you know, they're fearing for one of the students' safety. And those situations are very difficult because, you know, the students themselves that's involved in the relationship is not bringing it forward. So getting them to, you know, participate in an investigation or give information or even go along with, you know, the recommendations or the sanctions that you put in place to keep them safe, they don't follow them. So it's that's a very difficult situation. We've had a couple of instances where we did have to remove one of the students from the university, and it wasn't because the complainant wanted it to happen. It's because we found it necessary because it kept progressing, you know. And I really think that we need more training. I mean, we're doing well with the training on what, you know, Title IX is, how to report it, you know, how to recognize it. But I think we need more training and programming around relationships and what a healthy relationship looks like. I think that's one of the problems.
Yeah, and that brings me to my next question. I'm going to be just wanting some feedback, and I don't know if the compliance officer or even you, Dean Johnson, or anyone else. Erica, do you offer training to students, faculty, and staff on this issue? And if so, is it mandatory, and what are the consequences if it's mandatory if they don't participate in the training?
Well, this is Dean Johnson. I'll respond. We've had some training on it, but I think we need to do a lot more. And the training that we've had has not been mandatory, and a lot of it has been student-driven, which I think is really good. But, again, we need to add some mandatory components about healthy relationships. Because I think that is a big part of the problem. You see a lot of controlling behavior on both sides and, you know, not really knowing how to address conflict, you know, so how to address conflict in a relationship. How do you, you know, not be controlling, you know, this whole going through the phone and, you know, that kind of thing. How do you do it? What does the healthy relationship look like?
Interesting. What about Old Dominion? Are you guys aware of any training that may take place? And if so, is it mandatory, if you're aware?
Well, was that Andrella?
Yes.
So, go ahead, Andrella.
I know that I'm just new to Old Dominion University. This is my third week, but I know students do participate in training during orientation, and it's highly suggested. I believe it may even be mandatory, but I'm not familiar with everything that it entails. So I'll pass off the mark, Lieutenant Anthony.
And I'll piggyback off that. Like Andrada said, there is what they say is mandatory training for incoming freshmen. But the reality is there's really no teeth to it because there really aren't any consequences. In other words, it doesn't affect anyone's GPA. It doesn't affect whether someone graduates or not. There's no disciplinary hearings heard if they don't attend. So while they say it's mandatory, you know, what's mandatory if you don't really have to go? So I think we're sort of getting into semantics. Now, at ODU, we also have a very heavily involved women's center that acts as an advocate and has a number of proactive programs that are available to reach out to both students and staff members, but that's generally by invitation. In other words, the women's center is not going to come and say, hey, we're coming to your division today to conduct training. It doesn't work like that. However, if that particular department or unit wants the Women's Center to conduct training, like our agency and police department. They've come to our agency a number of times. We ask for it because they're skilled at being an advocate and we're skilled at investigations. And sometimes you have to marry the both, and there are ways sometimes that they're able to get more information by the way they talk to people than traditional law enforcement methods.
Right. Great. Interesting.
And
Vanessa,
I had a quick comment about just training in general, particularly around Title IX violations. I just think it's important that even if it's mandatory for students to participate, that whatever training program is offered resonates with that student population, because we know that companies do provide sort of a training programs for campuses, but you know it's important that students can connect with that training. So, for example, seeing students like themselves in the modules, or having, of course, showing a same-gender-loving relationship and they're encountering domestic violence. It's just important that, again, that training, if training is offered and it's via some sort of online platform, that, again, that it resonates with that student population.
Good point. Erica, at Virginia State, do you guys have mandatory training, or that's, you know, for faculty and staff, and it's mandatory? How is that working?
We do offer mandatory trainings. They come in a variety of ways, though. So what we try to do is piggyback off of other mandatory trainings. So we try to squeeze in our education when there are already other mandatory trainings happening. So, for instance, when the RAs come in the fall and they're about to get ready for the year and they have to be trained and they have to go through their RA training, we see if we can squeeze in some time in there to talk about, you know, dating and domestic violence, how to recognize it, what is your role, because we have to talk about mandatory reporters, you know, who is required to report to who. So we have to get that information off to them. The way that we have been doing mandatory education is usually piggybacking off of some other form or function happening. Even for the athletes, we've had mandatory trainings for the athletes where they would break them up into all the women's sports would come one day and all the male sports would come another day. They all have to get that Title IX education piece. And so what we've done in the past is we've had me just come in and also split that time with the Title IX coordinator. And when she does her piece, I give them information about, you know, dating and domestic violence, being an active bystander, their role as leaders on campus. We also have online education training that we've been implementing. We had one at first, which was Haven, and we've moved on to, I think it's Student Success is the one that we are using now. And the way that we're going to try to do that one in the fall is holds on the account. Now, I'm not sure how that's going to work.
That's going to be interesting.
Right. That could be a whole mess. But the way they're going to do it is they're attempting to, especially for the incoming students, because they're the ones who have to have it, they're trying to roll it out for them ahead of time. So they will get lots of notice before they even come to school that they should have taken it, and where to access it. We've made it very accessible on the website, so there's like a tab right on the website that says like mandatory trainings or something like that, mandatory education, and it's right there. So they'll be able to click it and get started right away. So it's going to be part of their admission coming in, and then if they haven't, I'm not sure how that's, we haven't gotten to that yet, how that's going to work out. If they have come to school, they're ready to start school, school is ready to start, and they haven't completed it yet. But in the past, we've, you know, threatened that there would be holds on the account, but nobody really wants to be accountable for releasing those holds and things of that nature. So we're still in talks about how to make that, you know, exactly mandatory. I've also done residence hall trainings where I go into every residence hall and do an education piece where we're talking about all these things and how to be an active bystander and what they can do and, you know, definitions, some kind of very 101 type things, but also encouraging them to get actively involved. We do that, and sometimes some of the REs make it mandatory and will say something like, if you don't go, there will be a fine, $5 fine, or, you know, I'm not sure if they truly enforce that, but it really does bring the residents out. Like, they're terribly scared of that $5. I don't know.
Oh,
so,
wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Mess with the money. That'll get their attention.
Exactly. So we've found ways to try to implement that mandatory piece and to make it somewhat mandatory, but we still have, you know, because there's really no telling whether or not we are still getting everyone.
Mm-hmm.
We know that we're absolutely not because, you know, sometimes people are, even though you say it's mandatory, they're still going to test your limits until something does happen. And we haven't implemented anything such as like holds on the account to know that, yes, this is absolutely going to happen. This is the absolute consequence if you don't complete this training. But we've had pretty good turnout. The other things that, you know, I've mentioned, the RA trainings, even the REs, they have their, you know, mandatory meetings that they have to go to maybe once a week, I think it is, and that's how we get to that staff. We just try to get along and get this information to people attached to some other mandatory training that they have. So it's
right.
Very important for us to talk to these different departments and things like that, different departments and areas on campus to find out when and where are your mandatory trainings and how much time can you spare for this thing, because we have to cover this information. You need to have this information, kind of putting that on them because we are a school that receives FAWA funding.
Mm-hmm. That's good because you sound like you guys are really trying every avenue possible to make sure that they get the training. The only interesting thing about it is always changing. Information is always changing, so we always have to constantly, I guess that's what brings us to programming. Let me
right.
ask this question. Is anyone using no contact orders, and are they finding that they are effective, and what are the challenges do you face in trying to enforce it?
Well, Lieutenant Anthony from ODU, we do use that, or rather student conduct utilizes that. However, that's really only going to be semi-effective if the students involved are in fact students. And so, for example, if the suspect is not a student, then that's not going to really do anything. Additionally, there is no criminal teeth involved in that. So while they may violate a no-contact order, and potentially that could result in a suspension or expulsion from school, that doesn't necessarily stop the activity.
That's interesting. Now, let me ask you, in situations like this, maybe a law enforcement question, and also want to hear from student conduct side, what happens when you have, let's just say, a student who lives in the community and they have a protective order? They had a domestic in the community. They have a protective order. Is it required of them, or is there anything written during orientation or at any time during their starting of school that if they have a protective order, do they need to bring that to the police department? Do they know to bring it? How does that work? Because, you know, there's incidents that may happen in the community. Protective order has been filed against the person that committed the abuse, and, you know, they have it, he's been served. Is there any information that goes out or educate students about, you know, commuter students, if they're involved in the domestic, is it required to bring that protective order? How do you handle those cases? Or if you had to, how would you handle it? Does it just get recorded with the police department? You know, they bring it in, and then at that point, does the police have a responsibility to do what? Just hold on to it, put something on the gate? Just how does that work?
Chief Covington here at Norfolk State University. Well, we haven't had that. I'm not sure how we get that out to the students. I know I address it with employees. I have really not
okay.
haven't addressed it. Students, and so And I'd probably get the same spiel that I give the employees, which would be, you know, we're not trying to get in your business, but, again, this is for your protection as well as the rest of the campus if you have a protective order. So if we have one on file, and what we've done for staff members is we put it at the gates so we know what vehicle we're looking for, we know the description of the individual, and so that's what we're looking for. But that's a great question as far as how do we address it with the students, because I haven't come across it, and but, you know, if the students don't know, then that may be a way that we have to address that. So we have to bring that up as part of our training next semester.
Mr. Walker or Dean Johnson, if in fact in your all's case, and even though you guys did not, I guess, weren't the ones who put out the no contact order, but say a student ended up, they were a student and there's a protective order filed against them, is there any responsibility of you guys to assist with enforcing that, or you just leave it to the in town and the community to let them, the city, enforce it?
So let me just clarify what you're asking. The protective order is against another student?
Yes, it is. They live together in the community. There was a protective order filed. She goes downtown, or her, him, and they filed a protective order, and it was determined that, you know, the protective order is in effect for 1 year. And then they, you know, she brings it on campus, and she sits down and she shares it with you. Is there any responsibility of your office to do anything with that protective order, enforce it, or just make note of it?
I would think that we would assist with enforcing if both parties were students. If the other party was not a student, we would not have any purveyance or any jurisdiction over that. But if they were both students, yes. So we could assist with things like if they had classes together, that type of thing. We may be able to go so far in keeping the other student from being in classes where we would have to set up arrangements where that student could not be on campus, because we have a small campus. And from my understanding, and I'm not really sure about the Commonwealth of Virginia, but if you have a protective order, that other person should not be able to be on campus if you have classes. Period. So I would defer that.
What if they have
to
classes?
The police department.
What if they have classes? I didn't cross over. What happens if they both have classes there?
I would say that we would try to arrange it so that the student that was under the order would be able to take those classes online. So we would try to work with the instructors to do that so that they would not have to come on campus.
The university would have an obligation to keep them separated, even though if the other person, so we would have an obligation. So whomever the protective order is served on, we would probably have a sit down after that. And if they, to ensure that they have no classes, like I said, to work with Dean Johnson to make sure that those classes are separated, that if, you know, they can't be on the yard. And so my thing is, and I'm not sure, you know, for a year, again, to ensure that there is separation and that if there's any contact, that we will be there to intervene. Again, using the Live Safe app, make sure to have all that information to no contact. But that would be – that's a hard one. Again, it's just being a small campus. But, again, I think to limit that person's access to campus as much as possible would probably be the best thing to help out.
Yeah. Because I think that's just one thing that I've always wondered about. If a protective order was filed, you know, in the community, how is it enforced when they come on campus and things such as that? So this is interesting and really thought provoking too. Let me just ask this: do you feel using the language interpersonal violence instead of sexual assault, domestic and dating violence, is confusing to our students, or do you feel interpersonal violence will capture any violence between two people in relationships? Because the language is just, you know, we hear dating violence, you hear interpersonal violence. Do you think that language is confusing to our students, or do we just need to educate around it?
I think interpersonal violence would be confusing to almost any group, any audience. Interpersonal violence you don't have to be in a relationship for there to be interpersonal violence. I could know another person, not have had an intimate relationship with them, have a fight, and it could be in some, you know, it could be considered interpersonal because it's between two people and we know each other. So I do think it's confusing. I think that you should use the term dating violence, domestic violence, sexual assault.
Any comment on that? Anyone else?
Yes, with some answer with ODU, and I would concur with the young lady in that, look, there's already many laws already in the books that the statutes specifically describe, here's what the crime is. Here what the elements of the crime are. And so, but now we're going to take some of these crimes and we're going to rename them and call them something else. So, yeah, that does tend to be confusing. Where to me, from a law enforcement perspective, and even if I was a student, it would simply just make so much sense to simply call it what it is. If there's a law that says you can't do this and it's called domestic assault, why change the name to something else where people may not be sure what the meaning of it is?
Okay. What about Vanessa?
I was just saying, I think that term was created to kind of to make it smooth over with the public. You need to call it what it is so everybody understands it. And I don't. If you look in the Virginia code section, I don't know if there's a code section that covers interpersonal violence. There's no section that says that. You call it what it is.
Okay. What about you, Erica, as a victim advocate? What's your take on that?
I was just about to
you know, we hear it a lot. We hear it a lot when we go to training. I feel as though a lot of times we're not even hearing the words dating and domestic violence anymore. We're hearing interpersonal violence. So what's your take on that?
I have to play the other side. Unfortunately, I do understand what you all are saying, but being in the education role, a lot of times, yes, I use that term a lot, especially with some of the things that I've said to you guys earlier. Language is very important, and it's becoming this kind of muddled thing of what's happening. What is the definition of relationships and things like that? So a lot of times I will use interpersonal violence, but at the beginning of when I'm doing trainings and things, I help them to understand, like, we wouldn't put that. We have a lot of resources that really spell things out for you, you know, so we have the student guide for responding to sexual misconduct. It will spell out for you what is dating violence and domestic violence, and we have the policy to do that. But when I am doing education, a lot of times I'm talking about interpersonal violence, and I explain to students that I'm covering all of that. When I talk to you about interpersonal violence, I don't want you to think that you are coming to a sexual assault forum because I don't want the stigma that is attached to whatever you are thinking or whatever you're telling your friends that, oh, yeah, well, she's coming here to do a sexual assault forum. I don't want you to think that I am doing a dating or domestic violence forum because that dating and domestic violence, from a victim standpoint, they don't want that label. They definitely don't want that label on what their relationship has come to and has become. They don't want to be labeled as a person in a dating violence relationship. I don't know what that has, you know, what that has brought up, but I get a lot of students who really fear that word, dating or domestic violence. They don't want to understand that. But when I talk about interpersonal violence, they're more likely to listen to what I'm saying. But I explain to them that when I say interpersonal violence, these are the things that I'm talking about. And I explain that everything has its own separate definition. Everything has its own separate law. But in terms of covering every relationship, if there is even a relationship, because we know sexual assault sometimes happens without a relationship, all these little nuances that they're telling me about, situationships where you're bullying a person by text and you are, it was a quote-unquote flirtationship. You guys met on Instagram. It was happening in the DM, and now you feel like he's stalking you. All of that, to me, goes under that blanket of interpersonal violence. And it's the things that I want students to understand is happening and how you have to be aware and recognize it. But you don't have to call it, at this point, dating or domestic violence. If you were bullied, then this is what bullying is. If you were stalking, then this is what stalking is, and these are the laws that govern it. If you were sexually assaulted, this is what that is, and these are the laws that govern it, and this is what you can do to prevent it, or either what you can do when you're in the stage of reporting it. But I use the term interpersonal violence so that students understand that I'm not here for one thing, and I'm not going to do one thing, but I'm going to cover a myriad of things because I need you all to understand it in a way that is culturally relevant to what is going on to you right now.
Good point. You know, I just know we hear the term all the time, and I know that it gets switched up a lot, and I just wondered if it does confuse, you know, individuals, and should we be using that term? But, again, I'm just glad you really expounded on that a lot, Eric, and I do appreciate that. Many people believe that domestic violence and dating violence is personal and that people should not interfere. How do you handle a victim that may get upset because campus police, dean of students, the dean of students office, or the Title IX coordinator are interfering in their business? How do you handle that? Because I know a lot of times, you know, people look at domestic violence, dating violence, it's personal, it's between us, it's nobody's business, we're not, you know, you guys don't need to be in our business. How do you handle that, trying to explain to the young lady, you're trying to, offer her assistance, and they're thinking you're really in their business, and then you see the case over and over and over again. How do you handle those cases, police, as well as victim advocates, and even the dean of students' office? Anybody want to chime in on that?
Lieutenant Anthony with ODU, I'll go first. And the first thing I'll tell you is that you can't force someone to be a victim. In other words, you can't, if they don't want to report the incident to the police and they don't want to prosecute the incident to the police, then from a law enforcement point of view, if you have no victim, you have no crime. And so you're limited in terms of the actions that you can take. So when the police get on scene, so one of the first things we're trying to do is, first of all, to make sure is he or she injured? Is he or she in need of some other emergency service, perhaps right now, whether it's counseling or something else? The situation is stabilized, because law enforcement can always jump back in the game, whether it's the next day, the next week, or some period of time. In many of these cases, there isn't a statute of limitations. Sometimes there is. So while we do want to get involved early, it's not critical. And so that's one of the things that we can tell people when we're seeing is, look, we're here to help. We want to help. You don't have to make a decision today. But if you do, we're ready, and here's how the process is going to work. If what you need right now is just help, someone to talk to, we can act to facilitate that as well, too, by putting them in contact with people like the YMCA, the Women's Center, Counseling Services, and a number of other organizations, both at the university and within the city as well, too. So we've sort of got to be a jack of all trades and wear multiple hats.
I would agree with that. In addition, this is Dean Johnson from Norfolk State. In addition to that, I try to relate to the student on a personal level. I get to know who they are, and I really care about what is happening to them. And I think that they understand that when I talk to them and I refer them to these resources. I've walked students over personally to the counseling center. I've called to get them assistance at the with the response, that type of thing. Same thing with the young men. I want them to be able to handle these relationships better. and try to get them the assistance that they need to have a better relationship so that they're not coming before us. Because when you see that it's recurring over and over, they want to be in that relationship, and there's really nothing that we can do to stop them short of removing one of the parties or both of the parties from campus. So, and that has happened, as I stated before. But what I try to do is let them know that we're not doing this because we're trying to be in their business, but because we care about their welfare and how their behavior is affecting the community.
Yeah. Anybody else have anything they want to speak on that? Because, you know, I know a lot of times when, you know, we have cases of dating and domestic violence, this is also the history not just on college campus but in other places where I've worked, this has always been the issue. And I think even when you get to the point of bystanders, they even feel, you know, hey, it's about them. Then you have another group of bystanders who, you know, feels that you shouldn't put your hands on another female. But primarily I see more bystanders taking the side of that's their business. Hey, you know, why are y'all getting in it? You know, it's between them. And it just really, really presents, a big challenge for us primarily for trying to reach out to provide services to the victim in this case. And I guess even, you know, one of the questions we're talking about, the victim that's not cooperative, how do you deal with them? And I guess this is in the same arena. I guess that presents another challenge because if she doesn't see or he doesn't see that they're in an abusive relationship, that creates a challenge as well. Going back and address this because we're almost done with the show, just talk about some programming. What kind of programs can we offer on campus? Because we talked about a wide variety of challenges we've had with changes in language, changes in trends on you know, same-sex relationships in Virginia. I think that's a challenge as well. What kind of programming do you guys do or are you doing that you feel have been really effective with addressing and educating students primarily on this issue of domestic violence? Because a lot of information is around sexual assault. However, I just don't think a lot of attention is going into the other forms of violence that Title IX addressed, and that is dating, domestic violence, and stalking. So what kind of, anybody have any programs they find that are, you know, that are helping to really educate students on domestic violence as far as healthy relationships?
This is Erica at Virginia State. What I try to do is make sure that we are stimulating students in different ways. So it's not just kind of the lecture and telling you what it's all about. We've had paint nights. That's very popular right now. But paint nights to raise awareness about the stigma and stereotypes associated with victim blaming and how people relate in dating and domestic violence relationships, how that can be very difficult. You know, on the outside,
right,
you appear one way, and on the inside, you appear another way. So
right,
we've had.
And Erica, I didn't mean to cut. Uh-huh. I don't mean to cut you off, but they're telling me in my ear that we're getting ready to go off the air. But one of the things I do want to say is this, though, and I do really appreciate all of you and all that you've been able to contribute to the conversation. But you guys can't hear what I hear in my ear. But I think that one of the things I can say is that with the programs that you have already mentioned, I can send out the email so that you can forward that information to everyone. And, again, I do apologize for cutting you off, because when they speak in my ear, I can hear them telling me how much longer I have. But, again, I would like to thank all of you for your time that you all spent on the conversation with us today. I do many of these Blog Talk Radio shows on various topics. If you guys have any topics you would like for me to speak on and you know some guests or even yourself would like to be a guest on the show again, just let me know, and we will be more than happy to have a program with you guys on it. Again, it has been great. On behalf of Institute on domestic violence in the African-American community. We thank you. Again, my name is Dr. Vanessa Hightower, and I'd like to thank everyone, and you guys have a good night. Thank you.
Well, that's it for today's show. You've been listening to IDVAC Blog Talk Radio, right here every week at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. IDVAC Blog Talk Radio is brought to you by the Institute on Domestic Violence in the African American Community in collaboration with the Women of Color Network and the African American Domestic Peace Project. Visit us on the web at idvac.org to find out more information about our guests and presenters and to download podcasts of previous shows of IDVAC Blog Talk Radio. Until next week, be safe.